Hello, and welcome to the second episode of Philosophy Exchange Podcast. I'm Carl, and today we are joined by Philosophy Exchange members, Rob,
Hi there.
April,
Hello, everyone.
and Jakob.
Hey, everyone.
And today we have a very special topic. We are going to be discussing thought experiments in philosophy. So, to that end, I'm going to hand it over to Rob for a brief introduction on thought experiments. Rob.
Thanks very much, Carl. So I'm sure a lot of you already have quite a good idea of what a thought experiment is, but just a quick recap. Thought experiments are key tools in analytic philosophy, particularly. They involve considering a real world or imagined situation which provoke a powerful intuition, often a moral one in moral philosophy, but it could be a kind of evaluative, intuition in philosophy of economics or science. These intuitions or judgments can then be used to test whether a philosophical theory is right or wrong, in a similar way to how scientific experiments are used to test whether scientific theories are true or false. If a philosophical theory and our intuition conflict, that could count as evidence against the theory, or interestingly enough, it could count as evidence against the intuition. It's a bit complicated deciding to what extent our conflict between an intuition and a theory counts as sort of strong evidence. But maybe that's something we can get into a bit later on in the podcast. So I think to begin with, April is going to discuss a thought experiment that one of her friends came up with, and hopefully that will make our discussion a bit more concrete. Over to you, April.
Okay, great. Thank you, Rob. I think I'll actually start with a question for all of the participants. So it's a very abstract one, so get ready. How would you judge a decision? How would you judge a decision is right or wrong? Is it optimal or suboptimal? How would you judge it?
Probably by its outcome.
Okay. Any other opinions there?
Yeah, maybe by its outcomes, also by its intentions.
That is so outcome. That is exactly how I answered my friend's question actually a couple of weeks ago. And then he presented me with a real world situation, which kind of is, going back to what Rob introduced about thought experiment, its purpose, right? So imagine this. You have a great friend who lost all his money in an unfortunate, shall we say, corporate adventure. And now he's kind of desperate. He grabs all his savings and went to a casino. Now, 3 days later, your friend returned with a bunch of money, a lot of money, more than he ever owned. Would you say that's actually a good decision?
Well, if he obtained more money than he had ever owned, that does, on the face of it, seem like a really good decision.
That's exactly also what I said, right? But if you think about the thought experiment, it can get to different outcomes. Like if you returned with a bunch of money, I think normal people would say, yeah, I mean, sounds like a pretty good choice that he made. But if you returned with no money, I think absolutely everyone would say, oh my God, look at what a bad decision you made. That is an example that we're actually judging people by the outcome of their decision. But if we think more about it, is the decision of going to the casino with all your savings a good decision? Judged by the outcome, it could be good or bad. But intuitively, I think a lot of us would say, well, it doesn't really sound like a good decision that you're taking this move. And so I think that's a thought experiment that was, to me, illustrating kind of the essence of all thought experiment, which is, hey, an abstract moral decision substantiated by a case in reality and giving you the actual, evidence to think on whether or not the your intuition is actually, correct or should be generalized into a framework. That is one thought experiment that has been troubling me for a long time, actually, because for a long time, I always thought that decisions should be judged by outcome. But in this particular case, the thought experiment illustrated to me that perhaps intention even plays a bigger role than outcome, and that has real-world implications as well.
I was wondering whether in this case also it's not just intentions and outcomes, but rather in this case, I mean, obviously with the casino, we kind of know how it's worked, and it's usually kind of rigged towards the casino winning. So we'd say on like in general, your friend would have like on average a higher chance of coming back with no money rather than coming back with tons of money. So it seems as if like background or world information kind of seems to change our intuition there away from out from like the outcome based.
Rob, you were saying?
No, I was just going to ask if you changed your original theory. Like, maybe instead of the outcomes, we should focus on the expected outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I actually think focusing on expected outcomes might be a better way to do it, right? So I presented to my friend, hey, you know, again, based on our understanding of casinos, the likelihood of this friend coming up with a bunch of money is so low that the predicted outcome of, you know, event A, which is coming back with a lot of money, is, I mean, it's just going to be very low. So if you judge on that, maybe you can make a more prudent choice. But then he returned me with this question. April, is it ever a good decision to go to the casino with all your savings? Really?
No, probably not.
His question has merit, right? Like, is it ever good? And then it's not only about casinos, obviously. Like, if you actually apply to more general circumstances, like any kind of risk-taking behavior, depending on the risk, like, is it really ever a good decision to do certain things? I mean, you certainly wouldn't say it if, say, like, your child is in the water and you say, hey, depending on chance, maybe somebody will pick her up. So I'm just gonna, you know, well past that. So it's the idea, I think, is, you know, illustrating the circumstance and seeing how it really plays out in your head based on different circumstances.
That's so interesting. I still don't think I would trust your friend as a financial planner for me.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, maybe that's a good point. Maybe it also depends on what you trust him to be, right? Like if this is actually a financial analyst, I think most of us will be like, hey, you know it and you still did that. Like, why do you do such a thing? But if this person is, I don't know, what is one profession in today's world that is actually determined by taking risk? I don't know. Maybe a professional scuba diver or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you would be like, well, maybe, you know, judging by this person's personality, I don't know whether it's a bad or a good decision, but it's an expected one. Yeah, so.
Okay, so Jakob, you were saying that you had a thought experiment as well.
Thanks. So mine's about moral intuitions as well. And we are, like with April, going to have a question in the middle, which I'm going to ask you and hope for some response. So I recently came across this thought experiment in which, imagine a chairman of a company, and this chairman goes to the board of the company and says, hey, I've got this amazing idea. It's going to make us a lot of money, but it's also going to harm the environment. And the board says, look, all we care about is the money. We don't care about the environment. So let's do it. Sure enough, they do it. They earn a lot of money. The environment is harmed. Now, the question is, do you guys think that the board intentionally harmed the environment?
I would say yes.
I'd say no.
You'd
the
say
board
no.
Particularly said that they don't care about the environment. Therefore, they're not intended to harm it either.
Yeah. The board did not intentionally harm the environment on the basis that their first priority is making money. So they're, you know, if they were purposely, you know, harming the environment in their second their goal was making money, then I would say they were purposely harming the environment. That's my thought.
Okay, so we have a 1-2 division towards no. Now, second part of the thought experiment. It's a very similar situation. Chairman of a company goes to the board, says, hey, I've got this amazing idea. We're going to make a lot of money from it, and we're going to benefit the environment. The board says, look, we really don't care about the environment. Just make us a lot of money. And so they implement the policy, and it comes as it was announced. The company makes a lot of money, and the environment is benefited. What you guys think in this case, did the board intentionally benefit the environment?
Unconverted, still no.
And I remain amongst the unconverted here.
It's quite interesting because for the second thought experiment with the benefits of the environment, you guys voted as most people did. And then for the first one, most people go with Rob's intuition, which is called, which in the literature is called the Knope effect. So like when the side effect, Carl, you mentioned it already, when like the side effect in this case is negative, people are like, oh, yes, of course they did intentionally harm the environment. In the case where it benefits, most people say, yes, the company did not intend to harm the environment. Now, this is quite interesting in a way because, so the general discussion was like, are people morally responsible for the side effect, or did they intend the side effect? And my intuition on this would be that usually for like a moral judgment of whether something is good or bad, you'd need some kind of assumption on the intentionality, while the intentionality on a certain behavior is kind of independent of the moral judgment. While given that in this case, just changing harmful and benefiting seems to switch our intuitions, or many intuitions, even though you guys are an exception here, switches our intuition on whether a certain action is intended, and that seems to be only by the moral judgment we make prior to this intuition. So it goes the other way around. So yeah, it's quite interesting. So to see that, and Rob, you said earlier that sometimes through a thought experiment, you have to change either your intuition or your theory. So in this case, at least in the simple case, I might either have to change my theory on intentions, that intentions can actually be, differ depending on moral status, or that I might have to switch my intuition and Rob, you, yours, about whether in the first case, the company actually intentionally harmed the environment.
Yeah, I find this super interesting, actually. But I think it has a really interesting implication, especially with regards to allocation of punishment, right? So in my friend's case, like if we go back to the first one, his quote-unquote punishment is losing his money for making a bad decision. But in this case, I mean, you can totally imagine some certain companies, let's say in the United States, whose intention is probably not to harm the environment per se, but what they did was... Now, the interesting thing is, do we punish them? Like, how do we actually, in public policy sense, allocate punishment or some kind of, say, you know, taxation or just, you know, kind of fees that they have to pay to the government for addressing the outcomes that they actually unintendedly cause, right? So I think the thought experiment itself, in the collective sense, has really interesting implication for the allocation of punishment, for the philosophy of, responsibility and outcomes. And what do we do when people unintentionally did something wrong?
Or do something right? Do we praise them for unintentionally benefiting the environment?
Yes, yeah. Because you would assume that a just society reward those who did right things and punish those who didn't. Now, I mean, if we look at the legal system, at least in the US and I think in the UK as well, actually, that's not necessarily the case just yet.
That's really interesting, April. I was wondering about something different, which is that you and Carl disagreed with me over the intuition in the first case about harming the environment. And that shows something interesting about thought experiments, which is that it seems people can reasonably disagree. They can have different intuitions. But I was wondering if I could just try and persuade you that I was actually right and you should agree with me.
Go because, for it.
Because it just seems so wrong to me that just because the board says that they don't intentionally harm the environment, that seems to absolve them of any blame. Because they could just say that, I mean, without actually meaning it. So it seems like we need to look at the effects of their actions as well as what they say. Otherwise, people could just be so disingenuous. What do you think about that?
Carol, that's a hard question. I leave it to you.
No. thank you. I would say, we have to consider the effect, certainly, Rob. But I think I go back to the way in which the thought experiment was stated, right? And again, this is, you know, perhaps having to do with the parameters of the thought experiment. But, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jakob, but I think the thought experiment was asking kind of, was this company and was the board kind of in the first place harming the environment? Right. And so to me, that question hinges on, well, what do we mean on kind of that first order action that the board is making? Now, I see the first order action of the board as being to make money, you know, in that Milton Friedman sense of make money for the shareholders of the company. That is the first kind of priority. And we can discuss whether that's right or wrong, but that's what I see as being the first order action here. So to me, it's very clear that there is a first order action and there is a second order action. And the second order action is kind of that secondary effect on the environment. What do you guys think of that?
I actually think that I see your point in terms of like the primary intention is to actually make money. The question is whether we can absolve them if we look at the whole picture. So they intend to make money, they know that the environment is harmed or benefited. And they kind of like, you know, they make the decision based on the information they've got. And then the question is whether you can just drop the intention in the side effect, whether you can just say, okay, they only intend the primary effect. And anything afterwards is not intended, even though you specifically know about it. Rather, you kind of intentionally take it into account. I think I'd see it that way, that they kind of, I mean, it's kind of like a secondary type of intentions if we stay in your way of phrasing things. But I think there's still some type of intention, I'd say, I think.
Very good. Now, for a final set of thought experiments, let's turn to Rob. Rob?
Previously, we started with a thought experiment and then ended up with a kind of question. And I wanted to turn things upside down a little bit and start with a question, which is how realistic does a thought experiment need to be? And I was wondering if anyone had an answer to that question.
I think thought experiments can be as abstract as one wishes they can be.
But as we saw, it does have a certain merit to have fairly realistic thought experiments, because then we can like coin them to very specific examples that we know from real life and kind of try to trim our intuitions to it.
I wonder whether it has something to do with you being emotionally attached. Like for certain experiments, like the one that's talking about environmental benefit in the corporation, it's abstract enough that I don't have a strong emotional reaction towards it, right? But if I do, say like my child is, you know, drowning in the water, or, you know, Donald Trump, blah, 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 then I do have an emotional reaction to it, which I think to a certain degree hinders my ability to provide an actual, you know, objective answer to that. So I wonder if that's also one of the elements, the emotion part.
That's really interesting, April. Yeah. So my answer isn't about the emotion, although I do recognize that's really important, and that maybe a good thought experiment should try and escape from emotion, which like clouds the rigor of our thinking. But if I may, I'll give you an answer to the question, and it draws on a distinction that the philosopher Derek Parfit made between what he called deep and merely technical impossibility. It sounds a bit strange calling impossibility merely technical, but if you just bear with me. So according to Parfit, a situation is deeply impossible if it violates the laws of nature. So it's just the world would have to be like a completely different place for this situation to come about. And it's merely technically impossible if, however implausible it might be, it's at least consistent with reality. Like, we wouldn't have to change everything about the world in order for that to take place. And he says, and I agree, that we should be more wary about the usefulness of our judgments and thought experiments in deeply impossible cases, because so much about our existence would be different if the laws of nature were different, that our judgments just seem to be really invalid here. And so I'll just try and illustrate this with what I think is a very, which I think is a bad thought experiment, and then quickly what I think is a good thought experiment. So there's this really famous case by the philosopher Robert Nozick, which is an argument against utilitarianism. And so the thought experiment is this. Imagine that there's something called a utility monster, which is really, really efficient at converting resources into utility, however you might decide what utility is. It could be happiness, say. Well, Nozick said, in this case, utilitarianism would say that we should maybe devote all of our resources to this utility monster. And that might mean that we leave, you know, everyone else to die, because it maximizes utility. And that, he would say, is an argument against utilitarianism, because this is just implausible. But I don't think that that thought experiment is very satisfactory, because it's deeply impossible. Like, we can't even conceive of what the world would be like if these kind of utility monsters existed. And maybe if we did know what that was like, it might seem quite a reasonable thing to do to devote our resources to that utility monster. Yeah, so do you guys have any reactions to that? And then I can maybe talk about what I think is a good thought experiment.
Well, if I can just say something briefly here, I find it deeply ironical that Derek Parfit is the one saying this difference between deep thought experiments versus merely technical ones, because he's one of the philosophers that some people criticize for being so abstract in his kind of thought experiments. I mean, one that I think of is he talks about personhood, and he asked whether, you know, a person is the same if they've been kind of split into little bits and bobs and then teleported, you know, not in the exact same way, but if all those bits and bobs of atoms were kind of drawn back together on Mars, the question is, oh, is this the same person, right? So I just wanted to comment. I just think it's really funny that Parfit is the one saying this.
What are you talking? I can totally imagine someone being on Mars, you know, collected of all his particles. I'm just kidding, guys. I mean, I think you're right, Rob, because I was trying to think of any kind of application of a utility monster and simply couldn't think of anything. So I do think that, to your point, like, the fact that I can't even have a realistic application of it, I don't know whether, you know, bad thought experiment is the right word, but I definitely think it's kind of useless, if I may say so in a harsh way.
Yeah, thanks, April. And that's a good point, Carl. Maybe Derek Parfit is being a bit inconsistent here. Although he might say that those crazy thought experiments involving splitting up your body and sending you to Mars, they're maybe not deeply impossible, because you know, maybe in 1,000 years time, we will have the technology to do that. So I don't know, as a bit of a response. Okay, so maybe I'll just quickly talk about what I think is a really good thought experiment, because it's not deeply impossible and it's so realistic. And it's quite a famous one, which you might have heard of before. It's Peter Singer's drowning child thought experiment. And maybe April was referring to it earlier when she was talking about children drowning. It's quite macabre, I know. But okay, so the thought experiment is this. So imagine you're walking through a park one day and you get close to a small pond where you're surprised to see there's a small child splashing about. And there are no adults around. And the child actually, they're not swimming, they're drowning. As you get closer, you realize this. So if you don't jump in and rescue them, you think that they'll probably drown. However, you're wearing a very nice suit and an expensive pair of shoes. And if you jump into the pond, then you'll ruin them. What should you do? Should you jump in and save the child? Or is it okay for you not to do that? What do you guys think?
I think the guy or I should jump in and save the child and not care about the suit.
Agreed.
Totally agreed.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I think we'd probably assume someone was a bit of a monster if they didn't. I think this thought experiment is really good because it's really realistic when we think about the way in which we spend money in the 21st century. Because there are, in fact, these opportunities that we have, also Peter Singer claims, to save children's lives in the developing world by donating relatively small amounts of money to global health and development charities. So there's a kind of real world application here. And so he is actually saying that we're maybe doing something wrong if we like spend our money on nice treats and we don't give it to the developing world. So I mean, there's all sorts of, I think, arguments you could make to say that those situations aren't analogous. Maybe you don't actually know if these sort of global health and development charities can actually save a child's life, but yeah, I think that it's at least a really simple and crisp thought experiment, and as opposed to Nozick's one, it's very realistic, and we can sort of, we can see directly how it implicates us in the real world.
I actually have a question. I think that I really appreciate the thought experiments, and I think it's a good one. It's when you start talking about the application of the thought experiments, say like saving children in poorer countries in the world, that I started to question, I guess, whether or not, particularly the question is, whether or not fidelity of the thought experiment, you know, the fidelity of how well pictured a thought experiment is compared to the real world implications that it intends to have, whether fidelity is a third kind of element or pillar of judging what is a good thought experiment and not. Because in my mind, when you presented a thought experiment, I think all three of us were like, yeah, definitely jump in and save the child. But when you're actually talking about say donating money to poor countries or the global south, like it all of a sudden has a different, I think if my answer would remain the same, right? Like you should not keep your expensive garments. However, the reaction time was longer. I noticed this in myself. And part of the reason is in the real world situation, it seems that there are so many different things that could go wrong. Like even if you choose right, you know. So in the thought experiment, apparently, if you jump in and save the child, hopefully the child will be saved. I think in real world, you know, you might jump in and nobody is actually saved. I wonder if that's, if the fidelity part is another concern.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, April. And, you know, we shouldn't take for granted that we do know what the impact of these sort of global health and development charities will be. So yeah, that's an important empirical question, I guess, that we shouldn't take for granted. But I don't think that necessarily argues against the more theoretical part of the thought experiment.
I have a question about you about Nozick's distinctions of highly unrealistic and more realistic thought experiments. So I would probably disagree that his distinctions actually judges on whether a thought experiment is good or bad. I think it really depends on what you're trying to do with your thought experiment and what you can actually do epistemically speaking with the thought experiment. So I think more concrete thought experiments like the drowning child can actually like inform us on our morals or on our political stance in real world applications, such as should I maybe sell my suit to donate money. But and this really depends on like what our values really are and like what our actions should be depending on our values. On the other hand, the utility monster is rather not trying to make any real world realistic case, at least as I understand it. Rather, it's kind of challenging the consistency of a theory and testing that philosophical theory. And so it actually has a completely different aim, and that aim might actually potentially be met. Obviously, that's contestable. So I don't think it's a question of like good or bad necessarily, but rather on what you can do with a thought experiment depending on its realisticness.
And that's a really interesting point, Jakob. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that. But Jakob, don't you think that thought experiments need to have at least some practical application? Otherwise, they're entirely irrelevant.
That's quite interesting. I think, so I presume you're kind of attacking my point that the utility monster kind of doesn't have any point except saying, okay, maybe the theory is inconsistent. But what it's doing is like, so maybe we can't think of like any special application right now of some kind of utility monster, what might be a good analogy. But on the other hand, we'd want our theory, at least our philosophical theory, also to encompass situations that maybe haven't happened yet, that we can't really capture with our kind of moral intuition. So if we come across something in 10 years that kind of, you know, that might fit some type of analogy of that utility monster, you know, we now, thanks to Nozick, are warned that utilitarianism might kind of fall apart or might have a problem with it. So in terms of like being aware of what might be out there, what we haven't experienced yet, I think it's at least in terms of like theory testing, I don't see a huge problem there. Although maybe for the application of the theory currently, it might not have any merits.
Interesting. Yeah, maybe there'll be some amazing AI in 100 years time or 10 years time that's a utility monster.
You know, I think this has been a really engaging and rich discussion here. And I, for one, will be looking up additional philosophy thought experiments on my free time. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Rob, April, Jakob, for this discussion. Well, that concludes our second episode of Philosophy Exchange Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you will tune in again next time. Bye now.